Rabbi Benjamin Hammer here at National Council Young Israel. I'd like to welcome Rebbe for conference call number 74. Many of the Shiras are focusing on the upcoming Yom Tov of Purim. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Let's start about Purim. Question number one. If I walk into shul just after the brachas on the Megillah, should I make the bracha to myself and catch up to the chazan using a chumash, thereby missing the beginning few psukim from klaf? Or should I listen to the entire Megillah from the chazan and not say the brachas? An excellent question. It is discussed in a sefer called the Nitei Gavriel on Purim, page Resh Mem Aleph. He says a person could be yotzei the mitzvah without the brachas. That's the simplest way to handle it. Just hear the Megillah without the brachas. He has an idea of saying a brachas in the middle, which is not so practical. It's interesting. By doing so, you will also avoid a potential problem. In the Bir Halacha Siman Tofresh Tzadi Siv Gimel, to Maskul Dafka, quotes a Big Day Yesha. And the Big Day Yesha he rejects, and almost everybody rejects it. But nonetheless, it exists. It's in print. He says that just as the Gemara indicates, the way we paskin there in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Tofresh Tzadi Gimel, Tofresh Tzadi Siv Gimel, that the Megillah need not be perfect, can be missing up to half, it's okay, except if it's missing at the very beginning or end, the very beginning is no good. So the Big Day Yesha claims the same is true as far as the reading is concerned. You have to read the majority of the Megillah from a klaf. A minority can be read from a printed book. We all know that people who don't hear because of Haman, they're supposed to catch up from a printed chumash until they get to the catch up to the Bakar, right? The Big Day Yesha claims, just as with respect to the written, the beginning is no good, so too with respect to the kriya, the beginning is no good. So according to the Big Day Yesha, if you pull this trick and read for yourself of a chumash, the first few psukim till you catch up, you wouldn't even be yotze. That's true, we don't pass in that way, but just this option over the other one is better for that reason. There's a sefer called the Mekadesh Yisrael, Rav Harfenis, he points this out, and he suggests, well, maybe if a person can catch up, it's better to make the brachas first. The problem is the average individual, even if he knows how to read from a chumash, may not get it right, even reading from a chumash. Moreover, if he's in a rush to catch up, he can easily skip a word here and there because he's in a rush. So I would discourage it. In a unique case where the person knows exactly how to read and the Balkara is going slow, he can catch him fairly quickly, then one could possibly suggest to make the three brachas by himself first, but in most cases, the better way to do it is to be yotze without the brachas. Question two. My wife will be going to a late Megillah reading Purim night because we have young children and there is no other practical solution. A, can my wife eat before hearing the Megillah? B, if my wife is not fasting on Tanis Esther, does she need to stop eating before hearing the Megillah? C, does it make a difference if she will hear at the regular time or a later reading? To answer the question two, we have to answer question three first. Eating or drinking before Megillah, especially this year when it is a daylight savings time and the Megillah will not be finished until 8:30 p.m., what are the parameters? You have to look in the Sefer Trumas HaDeshen, which is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, Siman Tofresh Tzadi Beis Siv Dalet. There he has a very interesting shaila. There were those who wanted to read the Megillah early as Plag HaMincha, because they didn't want to have to wait to eat until after the Megillah is over. If they read from Plag HaMincha and on, then as soon as it gets dark, they're able to eat. So the Trumas HaDeshen is trying to promote that position as being legitimate. And it is quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, in a difficult situation, a person, in fact, is able to read the Megillah from Plag HaMincha and on. This is also found in Hilchos Chanukah and Hilchos Sfiras HaOmer. By certain Rabbonim, quote the Rabbeinu Tam, even with respect to the Doraisa of Kriya Shema, this concept is found. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, if someone is on his ktsas and he can't go to shul, and he has to wait taught him to fast so long. So that itself was a Shas HaTzchak enough to be able to read the Megillah from Plaga Minchan on. So to strengthen this psak, the Chumash HaDeshna is very machmir on the Isser of eating before the Megillah. Otherwise, it's hard to justify relying on this rather difficult leniency. The Mishnah Brewer, in fact, points out, in Sifkat Yudal, that most Poskim don't agree with this Mechava. We should not rely on this. And we should wait until Tesek Lechavim to read the Megillah. That seems to be a more prevalent view, even though the Shulchan Aruch accepts the Chumash HaDeshen. The problem is he's hungry. So then the Mishnah Brewer has a very simple solution in Sifkat Yudalin. Te'ima is mutter. Achila, to sit down for a whole meal before the Megillah, is also like it's also before any other Mitzvah Saseh. But te'ima is okay. So if you're fasting and it hurts you, just have a little bite to eat. Don't understand why the Chumash HaDeshen himself didn't advocate that. Especially, simple pshat is the entire reason you not eat before the Megillah, you may forget. If you were in shul for a mire of time, and the break for a few minutes before the Megillah, you run downstairs, have a bite. You're not going to forget to come back upstairs when you come up a minute later. And you're not going to make a mistake and not hear the Megillah, or even before Ma'ariv in some shuls where they daven a little bit later. So that's a better option, much better option. How do you define a te'ima? So, kebetza pas, the size of an egg of bread, if you have bread. So shala there in the poskim, what about if it's cake? Some say even more than that, that's okay. According to most authorities, if it's either fruits or drinks, non-alcoholic drinks, you can eat or drink your fill. It's still only called a te'ima. So that seems to be a much better solution. So the parameters are the average individual who's strong enough to wait after 8:30 should wait till after 8:30. Someone who, for whatever reason, can't wait that long, let them wait till it gets dark. And dark, for this purpose, that's just throughout a number, approximately half an hour after the sun sets. So that would be approximately 7:40, I'm guessing, is again the approximate time. So I'm talking about in New York City. So then you can have a bite to eat, eat a drink, look up your calendar to see the precise time, and then you hear the Megillah, and your Ma'ariv is either here or there, before or after the eating, as the case may be, and then you can have your full meal afterwards. That's the better way to do it. So now we can go back to question number two. So can your wife eat before hearing the Megillah? The answer is yes. Let her have what we call a te'ima. And the same with question B. Should not fast because Tana says to, must she stop eating? The answer is yes. She should have a full meal then. But again, te'ima is okay. Does it make a difference here regular or later eating? No. Either way, te'ima is permissible. Question four. I'll be laying in a shul at a pre-Nate's Megillah reading. Should I have in mind not to be Yotze and go listen to the Kriya after Nate's B'Sibur? That's a very good question. A very good question. If you look at Teva Mincha Shlomo, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Chelek Aleph Simon Gimel, he is not sure if there is a concept of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh, if someone is Yotze only B'Dievet. What does that mean? It's quoted La'alocha in the Shulchan Aruch, that the proper time to read the Megillah is by day, and the proper time is to wait until after Nate's Hachama, Simon Tav Resh Pei Zayin Sif Aleph. There it says that if you read from Alos HaShachar and on, it is Yotza. Yotza means B'Dievet. So the Mishnah Brura, Sifkot and Vav, Him Onus Ksas, Yochel Lekros HaLechatchila Mish'olam HaShachar. He has to go to work, for example. Then he's allowed to read it earlier. But we all know there are many people who go to the early minyan, even though they don't have to run to work. They could have read it at a later time. So that is a bit of a problem. It's hard in a shul such as ours. We have two minyanim. But in a year like this, where the clock moved already, so the first minyan will probably read the Megillah before the sun rises because people have to go to work. So for them, it's an onus. So we really should have made maybe a third minyan, which would have the Megillah after sunrise, but before the the later minyan, but we don't have it this year. So it's a problem. Someone who's not an onus is still davening at that minyan. So of course he's yotzi, but yeah, but no problem. But if the Baal Kori is being yotzi then, so Shomer Kohen is no problem. But if the Baal Kori does not want to be yotzi then, you're relying exclusively on the concept of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazer, then it is a serious problem. Because it's possible that that someone who is reading and not being yotze and relying on Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazer, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazer, could be that you're not yotze even. So therefore, I think that the person should, in point of fact, have in mind to be yotze then. This way, the problem is solved. It's Shomer Kohenet. And you're yotze. You're the Baal Kori. They need you. The people have to go to work. They're anusim. Some may be not anusim, but you are, in effect, an onus to read for them. It's true you could be yotze later on. But according to Shlomo Zalman's svara that you may not be able to be yotze them, so we're again an onus in that sense. So I think it's better to be yotze in that kind of a case. And question five is something similar. In a hospital / healthcare facility, A, can one read Megillah for a sick person after plaque? Or how early can one do it? B, if yes, can this even be done in a group or should it only be done for an individual patient? C, if one does read early, who, if anyone, should make the bracha? So once again, very often hospitals and healthcare facilities, they can't wait so long. They can't wait so long. Even Plaga Mincha is pushing it. If the sun sets at 7:40, which is, again, an approximation for a week from tomorrow, a week from tonight, I should say, which is Wednesday night, which is the reading of the Megillah, if that's the time, so Plaga Mincha will be approximately a little after 6. That's late in many hospitals or healthcare facilities. People go to sleep very early in some of these places. I would say for a sick person, they have to plug and they can't stay up that much longer than that. It's an onus, and therefore it would be permissible to read the Megillah then. I believe it can even be done in a group. After all, the Trumas HaDeshen bases himself on the minute to say Shema before Seis. That was done in the big group, done in Shul. So I think it's okay. And C, in terms of who makes the bracha, so once again, in this case, I think they all are anusim, as opposed to the first case of prenates, and therefore it's possible for the Baal Kore to be motzi them, even if he himself will not be yotze, and he'll be yotze later on after we get stuck, which is a proper thing to do. But in any event, in that kind of a case, where he's not being yotze himself, it's being motzi others, even though he can be yotze them completely, because it's the chatchila for them, and it's others, it's a question who makes the bracha. It's, ironically, this is not found in Hilchus Megillah so much, it's found more in Hilchus Shofar. Same thing comes up. A person blows shofar, and then he goes blows for somebody else. It says about Ki and Shul, goes to people's private houses who can't get the shul to blow for them. So who makes the bracha? The Shulchan Aruch conveys an impression that it is the Baal Tekiah who makes the bracha. But if you look there in Mogen Avraham, Sivkot and Gimel, he says the minig is not that way. The minig is that the individuals who are being yotze make the bracha, not the Baal Tekiah. In the case of the Shulchan Aruch, he already was yotze. Presumably, it might be similar to someone who is going to be yotze later on, such as the case we're dealing with right now. So it would be recommended, if someone else there knows how to make the bracha, that person should make the bracha. If no one else can, then the Baal Kori can make the bracha for them. Question number 6. Is drinking on Purim only at the Suda and only with wine, or at any time during the day, or with anything alcoholic? They're two separate questions. One is the question of wine versus other drinks. And the second question is, any time of the day, or only at the Seuda. So this is very important to understand clearly. If you look in Siman Tuf Reish Tzadi Hei, the Hilchos Purim, the Ramah writes in Siv Beis that a person should be very careful. It's true, the Shulchan Aruch says you should be drink, Ad Lo Yoda. The Ramah says you should not get drunk so much, Yishte yosa milimudo. You drink more than normal. I think for most of us, more than normal is anything is more than normal. V'yishan. You should go to sleep. U'mitom sheyoshen. Eine odea ben oror homo neboruch Mordechai. Very clever way to fulfill the ad lo yoda. It seems that this is how it should be fulfilled, by going to sleep. Obviously, this is what we call in our language a chiv of mishta. And the Megillah says a chiv of mishta v'simcha. Mishta means ad lo yoda, and it can be fulfilled by sleeping under the influence of the wine that you just drank. Now, it's interesting to see that the Bir Halacha has two important comments upon this. Two important comments. One, how can Chazal ordain drinking? Answer, since the Nisim took place only through the Mishteh Hayayin, therefore we commemorate it by a Mishteh Hayayin. But if you look at the Megillah, it's only Yayin. And therefore, based on this Bir Halacha, it seems to me that one could not fulfill the mitzvah with anything but wine, even though some posts disagree. I think you have to have wine, bedafka, nothing else, and should stay away from anything else but wine. Okay? So you have to have a cup of wine, and under the influence of that cup of wine, try to fall asleep. That's the mitzvah of mishteh. It's also a mitzvah of simcha. Simcha is familiar to us from other holidays. We call it Simchas Yomtev. Simchas Yomtev is also only wine. As a matter of fact, the Rambam is mechadesh that you can fulfill simcha. You have to have meat and wine. The simple read of the Gemara is it used to be Psar Shlomim, and now it's only wine. The Rambam says it's meat and wine. And in this fashion, a person fulfills the mitzvah of simcha. This mitzvah, presumably, is linked to the Seuda. The Seuda is Purim, and ideally, should have bread. Some poskim say it's even ma'akeh of the bread. It should have meat, and it should have wine. So that's what's called the mitzvah of simcha. Now the question will be, can you kill two birds with one stone? Can you fulfill mishteh v'simcha with one cup of wine? The answer is probably yes. I'm not 100% sure about that, but it's practically not really feasible for us. Because we have a different minig, which is also found right over here in the Ramah. The minig is that you make the seuda, and most of it should be by day, and then it goes into the night. Into the night. Ramah says those who have the most of it at night is not so good. In my opinion, what it really means is you have to have the requisites, the meat, the bread, and the wine before it gets dark, before Shkia. It's hard to imagine that if you do that in your Yotze, and then the majority is at night, it's going to be retroactively not Yotze. I don't think that's what the Rambam meant. But for this reason, it's impossible for most people to fulfill the Ad Lo Yada by falling asleep, because most people are not going to fall asleep at the Purim Suda table before the sun sets. Later, I believe it's too late. So, therefore, what I do is I come home after Shacharis, have a little breakfast, have a cup of wine, and try to go right to sleep. You usually can fall asleep because you're pretty tired from the night before if you're up very late. Just sleep a little bit before the rush of all the Shalach Manos comes, etc. That's fulfilling the mitzvah of Mishteh, of Ad Lo Yada. And at the Purim Suda, another cup of wine. This is the mitzvah of Simcha. I think more than two cups of wine should not be had. This is not Pesach. No Arba Kosos, only Shtei Kosos. And the wine need not be the most powerful wine, just enough to be considered a somewhat alcoholic. And this is the proper way to fulfill the mitzvah of drinking on Purim. Just to review, is it only at the Suda or all day? The answer is both. All day for the Mishteh and the Suda for the Simcha. With wine or any other alcoholic, in my opinion, you have to follow the only wine based on the Bir Halacha. The whole reason, because of the Neis Gadol B'Shtia Sayayin, was wine. They didn't drink anything else. And we should also keep in mind the next Bir Halacha, the very next one, where it says that we're only commanded to have simcha and not holus and not shtus. But the simcha leads us to Avas Hashem Yisbarach. And therefore, it's such an important thing not to drink too much. As the halacha calls for chayei adam, if you know that by drinking too much will be mezalzel in a mitzvah, any one of the mitzvahs, the tefillas yadayim, bracha lefaneha, birchas hamazon, you'll miss mincha, you'll miss ma'ariv, which all of which has been known to happen for someone who drinks too much, or you'll be kalas rosh, is levity, better not to get drunk. Just drink a tiny little bit. And that's what I do, and I think it's the proper way to handle it. You can fulfill the mitzvah properly as per the bi'ur halacha and the chayei. Question 7. Is it permissible for a man to dress up as a woman on Purim or for a woman to dress up as a man? Is there a difference if they are not totally dressed up as the other gender? Here too, something which is found in the Ramah, in Siman Tov Reish Tzadi Vav, that's the very next Siman, and it says over there in Siv Ches, certain interesting customs arose on Purim. One of them is that Gever Lovesh Simlas Isha of Isha Kli Gever, Ramos says, Ein Isa B'Dover, Me'achash Ein Mechav Mel L'Simcha B'Alma. Very, very big Kiddush in this Ramah. Not obvious. The Mishnah Berurah says, quite clearly, Sivkot and Laban. He says that the Bach says, Yesh Levatel Minig Zeh on Purim. We should stop it. We should stop it. Because it's a violation. There is a slight leniency, which is noted in the question. In Kol Malbushim Shalish, Rak Malbush Echa Shalisha, V'nikorim Hein, Evsha, maybe, She'en Limchot Bohem. We shouldn't protest against it. It's better to dress up as somebody else. If you have to dress up in the other gender, it should be only one part of your dress-up. The rest should be obvious who you are. Very, very, very important. This is a very important matter in today's world, especially the Dala Hakima Biramiza. Question number 8. What is the minimal amount to give for Matana Sevyonim? B. Exactly who qualifies as an Evyon? C. For Matana Sevyonim, is it better to give less money to more people or more money to less people? Okay. So the minimal amount, if you look in the Mishnah Berurah, in Siman Tov Reish Tzadi Dalet, Siv Katan Beis, it's quite a very, very minimal amount. He writes that from the Ritva, that you can give 2 prutas, because shavar prutas is enough. 1 pruta to 1 ani, 1 pruta to the second ani, that's good enough, according to the Ritva, according to Mishnah Berurah. The Shai Shuvah says, it would give what we'll call in the language of Kedei Seuda, 3 eggs. Today, we said earlier, that the Seuda should consist of kazayas of bread and a kazayas of meat and a revius of wine. That requires, in my view, at least a dollar. So she give a dollar to each ani at the minimum. Obviously, kol amarba reza mishubach. Who qualifies as an evyon? Someone who lacks money, who needs money. The word evyon means someone who desires money, doesn't have enough of it. Now, it doesn't mean a millionaire. Mishyesha mona rotsa masayim. We don't mean that. It means someone who can't make ends meet. That's considered to be an evyon, and such an individual qualifies to give money. So the poskim say that kol haposhet is a yad, whoever puts his hand out, we assume, is a proper evyon. Obviously, you should diversify, give money to many, many evyonim. So this will enable you to make sure at least one of them really, really is an evyon. And that is one of the reasons why it's better to give more to give less money to more people than the other way around. The Rambam has it all year long that way. That Kolifi Rova Meister, the Rambam and Pirkei Avos, should be given more to, give fewer to more people rather than the other way around, do more Meister Mitzvah, even though the amount is coming out of your pocket because the same. So it's true on Purim, everyone comes in, should give them something, and whatever Mitzvah you can do on Purim, Matanos of Yonim is a very great Mitzvah. The Rambam writes, it's more important to be Marbe Matanos of Yonim than Shalach Manas. People have all kinds of Hidurim, spend fortunes of money, getting fancy Shalach Manas, and all kinds of things going on. Well, Matanos Levyonim is even more important than the Rambam writes, so we should be married by Matanos Levyonim. This concludes the Purim part of the Shia for today. We go to question number 9. Is halacha, is there a concept of a corporation so that the individual father person is not held responsible for actions of the corporation. For example, Yeshiva X knows that an employee has not cashed a paycheck in a while, and the paycheck is now expired, and won't be honored by the bank. Does the school administrator have any obligation to inform the employee of this? Or can the administrator say, if the employee requests the paycheck, will give it to him or her? But if they do not, then it is iu da afsa na nafshe. Is there any obligation of the administrator as an individual, or can he say that his action will be taken on the interest of the yeshiva? It seems to me, a davar pashut has nothing to do with corporations. The same thing can be true of an individual. You gave him a check, he didn't cash it. It seems to me that at least, because of the fnim yeshua sadin, you should make sure he gets paid. At least. Maybe even Medina. We don't apply the principle of Iyud Afsan Anafshi in every single situation. There is a v'haf t'orecha kamocha. There are many reasons that a person should try to make sure that the employee does get the check. Lefiani is daiti. It will be true even with respect to a nakri because of Kiddush Hashem. If the Yisrael is known as the Yisrael, even in that kind of a case, even though it may be called Hashava Saveda, but as we've spoken on previous occasions, the Kiddush Hashem is a much bigger mitzvah. Okay, question number 10. The walk-in refrigerators that are 16 square amas owned by caterers require a mezuzah. Interestingly, the Chovas Adar, the Rav Bloizal, writes in Perek Beis, if cut in your Beis, your potter, because you can't stay there. It's too cold. It's too cold to stay there. You can't really live there. Especially, as I believe our question refers to, a commercial situation. There's not even a clear psak on whether a commercial zone requires mezuzahs. You're not really living there, only working there. So he says, kal vachomer, if it's a commercial zone, which is a refrigerator room, where you can't really stay there too long, it's too cold, the chovas adar says you are potter. Baal Igwas Moshe, as quoted in Oli Yeshurun, page 4, Rabbi Feldazal says, you be chayef, which is quite a remarkable psak. The wonderful Savior, Ogur Bolecha, Rabbi Feldman of Mezuzah, also says that you would be chayef. My personal view is that I think you probably would likely be potter, but since people want to, you know, have a protection, they want to have put up a mezuzah, fine, do it without a bracha, and on the outside of the refrigerator, so it shouldn't get ruined by the cold. Question number 11. What is the proper psak for when to observe a bar mitzvah or a yahrzeit in a leap year? Additionally, a sincere Baal HaBos asked when to celebrate his other birthday and anniversary in a leap year. How should I respond? Well, bar mitzvah and yahrzeit are black letter law. Bar mitzvah is found in Siman Nun Hei Sif Yud. The Ramah says a person who was bar mitzvah, born, I should say, in a plain year, I assume from the questioner that he was born in a plain year, the bar mitzvah is an other sheni. Other sheni, that is, right now, an other sheni. You should not have been invited to any bar mitzvahs in the past month, because of other rishon. This month, it can easily be many bar mitzvahs, because it's other sheni. Remarkably, if you have a year such as this, and a person is born in the second month, so for sure it's Adar Sheni. If he's born the first month, the Mishnah Berurah writes in Siman Nun Hey that we follow the psak of most authorities. He writes in Sifkot Mem Gimel that if you're born in first Adar, by mitzvah in first Adar, against the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham says you're only to be in the second other, which, if you ask me, is a more correct opinion. I believe it's more correct opinion to wait till the second other, even if you're born in the first other. The meaning is like the Mishnah Berurah. I tell people, you want to make the first other, which is the Minhag HaOlam, so then you should try to limit your Bar Mitzvah boy's performances to Kriyas HaTorah and an Aliyah, both of which, technically speaking, can even be performed by a Katan. But I would not recommend that this boy davens for the Yomud or benches in the Minyan. For these things, we require a Gadol, and I'm not sure if he's a Gadol. The Magen Avraham says he's not a Gadol. What about a yahrzeit? Also black letter law. Siman Tov Kuf Samaches Siv Zayin. Three opinions. The Mechaber says, again, if it's Nifter and Rishon, it's Rishon. Sheni is Sheni. Nifter in a plain year. The Mechaber says you commemorate the yahrzeit other Sheni. The Ramorites other Rishon. And he quotes a custom, we should do it both times. Now the reason for that is as follows. The reason for that, there's no steer in the Ramah where he says that the Bar Mitzvah is second other and the Yahrzeit is first other. There's no stira. It's based upon the Gemara Masechta Megillah. The Gemara Masechta Megillah asks, which other should we read the Megillah in? So the first opinion says, the first. Ein Rav Yehuda Ala Mitzvah, first opportunity. We pass like the second one. Mismach Gula L'Gula Adif, the other which is Samach L'Nisan. So this is as far as Kriyas HaMegillah is concerned. So now, with respect to a yahrzeit, which is a commemoration of an event, this time a sad event, we should say once again, Ein Mavir in Ala Mitzvah. You have two opportunities, first or second. Seize the first opportunity. As Gemara has a Masechta Megillah, whenever the principle of Mismach Gula Gulav does not apply, it does not apply to a yahrzeit. So therefore, the first other makes perfect sense. Frankly, it's better than the Meshulchan Aruch, who says the second other, based upon Purim. But the Ramah makes more sense. Now, what about twice? The Vilna Gaon likes the twice Shita. He said that fundamentally, there are two others. So there are two anniversaries. And by rights, we should have laid the Megillah twice. Chazal gave us a break, and we only do it the second time. Here, too, you want to have a commemoration of a yahrzeit, especially the Shulchan Aruch talks about fasting on yahrzeit. So it suffices to have the commemoration of the first other, because Ein Mavir in Ala Mitzvahs, and there's no need to do anything in the second other. The Vilna Gaon says you should keep yahrzeit both others, if you're able to fast both others, and therefore he would say, should daven for the Yom twice, the yahrzeit twice, the yahrzeit candle twice. That is not the minhag Yisrael, although some people try to daven for the Yom, as long as they're not displacing another chiyuv, that would be fine. So this is all black letter law. You will not find in black letter law what about your birthday and your anniversary. So a birthday, there are two competing views. An anniversary, I think, is easier. I believe an anniversary is exactly the same as a yahrzeit. So if you're a Sephardi, you would keep the anniversary on the second Adar. If you're an Ashkenazi, the first. You'll ask, what's the mitzvah over here? And we're not a mitzvah. Sure, it's a mitzvah. V'simech es ishto, make your wife happy, anniversary. Take the first opportunity to do so in a special way. In other Aleph, if you want to be a really good husband, follow the Vilna Gaon and have two anniversaries and eat out twice or give her two gifts, as the case may be. However you celebrate your anniversary, everyone has their own way. So that's the anniversary. The birthday is also could be the same as an anniversary. It's the anniversary of your birth. Then it would follow the same rules as a yahrzeit, the same rules as a anniversary. And that's what we do in our home. We have, thank God, many other birthdays. But in parts of my family, they celebrate the birthdays in the second other, even though they're born in the regular year. And they are presuming, I understand, that a birthday is you finish that many years. It finishes that many years, like a bar bas mitzvah, you have to wait till other sheni. If it's just an anniversary, then it would be other Rishon. So we assume it's an anniversary, but others assume it's a completion of years. That's what this serious, sincere Balabas' question depends upon. Question 12. A pot of cholent was fully cooked on the stovetop on Friday. May one place it onto a plata right before Shabbos? It is already edible on Friday night, but it does cook more and tastes even better on Shabbos. Would that make the plata now be considered a normal way of cooking and not allow one to eat up dry food on it on Shabbos? It's a good question. Let's discuss this first, because B, C, and D, we'll forget about it. Let's just do A. In my opinion, technically speaking, you can do what you want on Friday because it's already obviously fully cooked. And even according to the Mechaber, if it's mistamik virala, it's okay. And quote the Ramos, as long as it's chati bishula, it's okay. No problem. But I don't advise it. Because once you do it, you have designated your plata as a plata which cooks. And once it's a plata which cooks, for you at least, you can no longer put things back from the fridge on the Shabbos with a nirik and mevashel. That's the reason why some give that you should not put things directly on a plata. In my opinion, it's permissible to put from the fridge dry foods on a plata, because no one that I know uses a plata to cook. Now this individual wants to be an exception to that rule, so then he's not going to make a problem for me, because he's a butler daito, but he makes a problem for himself, and therefore it seems to me it's not worth doing it, because he's going to then, in effect, make the hot plate unusable to put foods there on Shabbos forever. So it's not worth it. Question B. A congruent showed me an ad for a plata that changes color when it heats up. Is there any problem with using a timer to turn on such a plata on Shabbos? Now, we have to assume the timer is okay. You have much bigger problems than changes color. You're putting on a fire, the pshuta. So, therefore, we assume that you're permitted to do it. You can put a light on the Shabbos clock. This is no different to the way we accept Rav Moshe as chumash by Shabbos clocks, which most people don't accept. But if you hold against that chumra, there's nothing wrong with using a timer to turn on that kind of a plata, or any plata for that matter. C, anyone put food, solid or liquid on a plata before the timer turns it on Shabbos? Well, if it's a non-adjustable plata and it's solid, in my opinion, you can put the food on even after it turns it on, and kal vachomer before it turns it on. Liquids we do not do, because there's a question of bishul. So you cannot put any liquids on either before or after the timer goes on. It's a sugas ha-gemara, mesech the beta, echad nosen esa this, echad nosen esa that. And that's why this would certainly be not allowed. Again, if it's an adjustable hot plate, we generally assume it cannot be put on even before the timer turns it on. Some disagree. If it's one of the kind of hot plate that we spoke about earlier, that people sometimes want to cook on. Once again, we don't accept that cooler, but maybe with a timer in combination, there's what to talk about. But certainly better to avoid all of these situations. D. Where do we lemaisa draw the line between what is considered a solid dry and a liquid regarding warming up on Shabbos? In other words, if there's a little bit of sauce or gravy on a piece of meat, is it treated as a dry solid? This is a very complex question. Some say that it depends upon the rove, depends upon the majority. Some say that any little bit of liquid is already not allowed. Just the tiniest bit is already not allowed. So you have to dry it to the nth degree. And the prevailing minig is neither. Prevailing minig is that you don't rely on a majority solid. You need not take a towel and wipe off every last piece of liquid, because everything has a little liquid in it. You should try to make it as dry as possible. You can wipe off a little bit. So whatever you can remove, which is liquid, you remove, and the remainder can stay. Question number 13. I was told by the previous rabbi of the shul that the minhag that you have for being shliach tzibur is that either you wear a talis or you wear a jacket. If you have a jacket, no need for a talis. I've established the minhag for the last 10 years to have all shlichei tzibur wear a talis regardless. This is to show greater kavod and to give a person the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis, as they may be lacking in this mitzvah area. Whenever the former rabbi comes to visit, he hasn't been rabbi here for 13 years, and davens for the yomid, he makes it a point to not put on a talis of mincha marav. I've instructed the gabbai to not say anything and leave these things alone. A. Is it incorrect to have changed the original minhag? B. Now that it has been established for the last 10 years, can it be upheld? C. What should I do regarding the rabbi emeritus? My understanding is that in most shuls, the minhag is that about tefillah wears a talis for shachris and for mincha, not for ma'ariv, because ma'ariv is not live with lav zman tzitzis. That's what I've seen around. I think most people on the phone will agree that seems to be the prevailing custom, and therefore it's completely correct of this rabbi who was there for the last 13 years, 10 years, to establish the custom to put on a talis for mincha, which didn't exist before. Ma'ariv, if you want, I'm not sure they don't have it for ma'ariv, but at least for mincha, he certainly had the right to establish this custom. Now it's been established, it should be upheld, and it's really wrong for the rabbi emeritus to do what he's doing. But you have to understand that not everything which is wrong must you make a fight over. Have the rabbi argue with the former rabbi would be a field day for the balabatim. This is blood sport. Don't say anything, let it be, even though he is doing the wrong thing. If you have a language to talk about it privately, that's one thing. But I don't think this guy, based on what you're telling me in the questions, is interested in hearing. Just let it go, even though it's what he's doing is not correct. 14. Can one buy, use any fresh, unprocessed meat or chicken for Pesach, which is bought now or in one's own freezer? So the OU sent out some guidelines about this. Whatever is made in a factory, under factory conditions, is in almost 100% sure kosher the Pesach all year long, even though it doesn't say OUP. It's kosher the Pesach anyway, and the same could be said of presumably other hashkachas as well. And therefore, if you get it ripped off on Pesach, you can use the stuff from before. But that's only in the case where it's made under factory conditions, ideally where it's packed under factory conditions. But once it gets out of the meat factory, if you will, and comes out and it's somehow butchered or otherwise processed in a local butcher shop, that's much more complicated. Much more complicated. You have to check each and every case out separately. It may, in fact, have been contaminated with a little bit of chametz here and there. So you have to be more careful in that type of situation. Finally, 15. If someone is suffering from gout and grape juice or wine make it worse, what should he do regarding the abacosis? How much can he water down grape juice? Can he water down light grape juice? So here, it's a many-part question. The first question is a medical question. You know, what damage can be done by wine and or grape juice to someone who suffers from this condition? Everybody should ask a doctor, because I dare not respond to medical questions without a doctor chiming in. And different doctors have different takes on it. It can be, depends how serious the take is. I'll just tell you one thing. The Gemara Masechta Nedarim Mem Testament Beis and Kodesh Shulchan Aruch Tuf Ayin Beis, if you tells us that a person should be dochek es atzmo, you should push yourself to fulfill abakosis, even if it's maziko, it hurts you. What does that mean? The Mishnah Brewer writes, it's of cotton lamin hay, he's mitzayr, it's in a bit of pain. The koi barosho gets a headache. That's Yerushalmi in Masechta Pesachim, quoted by Beis Yosef over there. Not required to say it's so sick, you have to lie down in bed. And the Shaar Tzion says, what's the source? Ze poshut. Why is it poshut? Ein ze derech cheirus. It's not considered to be a derech cheirus, and therefore there's no mitzvah, and it makes you sick. You should not do it. This is not so simple, what he calls poshut, because at the time that he's drinking it, it's a very big cheirus. Yeah, there'll be a delay in a few hours. You get sick. But that's only a few hours from now. Why isn't it derech cheirus right now? Not completely clear to me. Now, more than that, who says it has to be derech cheirus? Who said? Maybe you can fulfill the mitzvah without derech cheirus. You should look on the Rambam and the Rif and the Kuf Chesem and Beis. They're two separate obligations. We discussed before as well. One is a chiyuv to drink. It's called derech cheirus. And one is a chiyuv of abakosis, which could be fulfilled, presumably, even with other drinks, if necessary. If necessary. Of course, you have to have the wine for the first reason. But given this situation where wine and grape juice are both dangerous for him, he should fulfill the mitzvah of abakosis, what's called Chamar Medina. Chamar Medina means literally the drink of the land. What's the drink of the land here in this country? So people went on the internet for me and found out that the number one drink is water. But that's not good for Chamar Medina. So that's not good. That could be really not Chamar Medina. If the most popular drink is water, and water is not good, it could be nothing else qualifies. The second most popular drink is coffee. Now, coffee is somewhat good. It's also water. It's a little bit of flavoring. But that's not, should be much more makel. If you have to be Yotze Chamar Medina, which you have no alternative, with coffee than with water. I think the third popular drink is soft drink, soda. Then comes, somewhere down the list comes beer. Obviously a Pesach, it's not kosher to Pesach in most cases. But these other things are called Chamar Medina if you absolutely must. It's just, you can't handle it. If it's going to cause you a little bit of an after effect, if it's not too serious, you're not going to be bedridden, you should try to have wine or grape juice. Is wine superior to grape juice? According to most poskim, the answer is yes, because wine is mesamech, as we saw earlier. The Sefer Chinuch writes, even for Kiddush, should have yayin mesamech. I said, for Kiddush, I drink wine as opposed to grape juice. Havdalah, I drink wine. So, in this case, the questioner asked that both wine and grape juice are equally problematic from the medical perspective. But there can be cases in which wine is a problem and grape juice is not. Pregnant women, they have a big sign, don't drink wine, but they can have grape juice, etc. So then you should be fulfilled the mitzvah with grape juice. Now, Rav Moshe seems to say you can't fulfill with grape juice, and his proof was the Amora in Masechet Nedarim, the Mem Testament Beis, who got sick until Shavuos. What's the problem? Just use grape juice. Yeah, but the answer is they didn't have grape juice in Pesach time in those days. They would squeeze the grapes in the fall. There was no possibility of preserving it from Sukkot to Pesach, so they didn't have it. But Mitzvah HaZem, we do have grape juice all year long, it's preferred to have grape juice. And according to most authorities, if there's grape juice in the house, in the town, there is no Chamar Medina. So that's a very important reason to try to have wine and or grape juice. According to Rav Moshe, dafka wine, not grape juice. But according to most authorities, grape juice would also be good for those who despise wine. That expression of despising wine is found in the poskim. They say that Rabbi Yosef is quoted in the Dirshu, where it says that a person can't stand it. It's not derech eretz. He pukes from it. That's not called derech eretz. Yeah, but there it's where he can't stand it in real time. Most cases we describe is where only later on is the time that he feels it. Even there, a person, especially the person, should try to fulfill the mitzvah kedas ukedin. And if you have no alternative, fulfill the mitzvah the best you can with what's called Chamar Medina, which even though we have grape juice nowadays, and therefore according to the Shulchan Aruch, read simply, there is no Chamar Medina. In a pinch, you rely on those who say there is, and they suggest fruit juices, natural fruit juices, not the ones that are watered down. And that brings me to the next part of the question. How much can you water down grape juice or light grape juice? This is not an answer for me. If you go to the Kedem advertisement, they give you explicit instructions how much wine and grape juice can be watered down, if at all. Depends on the halachas of what's considered to be wine, the halacha. That has to be determined by the Rabbanim there, how much it's already been watered down, shashtil. They give you an idea of how much, if anything, can be added to the grape juice or even less to the light grape juice in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Arba Kosos. Thank you very much, and a Freilich and Purim.
Rabbi, thank you very much. I'd like to wish all the Rabbanim a Freilich and Purim. Bezrat Hashem, we hope to continue our Shailas with Rabbi before Pesach. Thank you very much. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.